Today's episode brought to you by Prime Video. Mr. Saban goes to Washington. Future of college sports is debated. More college football playoff updates. Where is Dusty May going to be? Maybe he stays at FAU and eating your way through the Big 12.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Cheddar and ranch drizzle. I know I said mozzarella wrong.
No, it's great. That's not, you just, yes. So the mozzarella will guarantee that will get three comments. At least.
You can't even say mozzarella.
I can't say anything. That's the whole point of the show.
Russ Dellinger.
Yeah, there's always a CFP update, Dan. It never ends. We've had 5 years of a freaking CFP update. And maybe we're getting closer, I think, to the finish line.
And SI's Pat.
I grabbed him after he got off the podium. I had asked him a question on the podium, and then I grabbed him afterwards, and he said, "Hey," he said, "Pat 40 from Sports Illustrated. Why don't you just say Pat 40 from the pod?"
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Prime Video. And, Ross, our Washington, D.C. government correspondent, was hard at work yesterday at a roundtable discussion that featured no less than Nick Saban, the GOAT, ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips, I believe, was there, Alabama AD Greg Byrne.
Yep.
We had some athletes. Cavender twins, were they there?
And their lawyer, yeah.
And their lawyer, okay. I think one of them's back playing.
President of the Collective Association, Russell White.
Okay, all right. So we had our latest thing. The big thing was Saban. He did most of the talking, I believe. You can explain what all this is. I will read a couple of his quotes for you. He mentioned discussing with Miss Terry. A discussion he had with Miss Terry, and quote, she said, quote, all the players care about is how much you're going to pay them. They don't care about how you're going to develop them, which is what we've always done. So why are we doing this? That was kind of a red alert that we really are creating a circumstance that is not beneficial to the development of young people, which is why I always did what I did. Obviously, he was discussing NIL, collectives, payments, stuff like that. All the things that I believed in for these 50 years of coaching no longer exist in college athletics. It was always about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life. That's the reason I always like college athletics more than the NFL. It's because you have the opportunity to develop young people. We can just stop there. Those were the bombshell quotes. Saban's been running around for a month now, dropping bombs on all of this stuff. He really must not have liked that Alabama team at the end there. My goodness. But were those comments, you read them when you read the reports of what came out, I read your column on Yahoo. Those are some, like, I mean, these are like some nuclear bombs on the sport. How were they in the room?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the room, you know, the explosion was a little less, as it often is when you kind of hear somebody, right, and you put in context of a conversation, you know, on Twitter and sometimes in stories, we can't quite do that. But I mean, my ears certainly perked up, you know, at that story. And I think that People in the room and people around Nick Saban knew at the time that he's probably going to take some criticism for that story. But as a few of them told me, hey, Ross, it's true. It's what happened, you know? So what is he supposed to do? Not tell the truth? Like, this is what happened. So I get it. I get that part. I think that story with Miss Terry coming up to him and basically saying, why are we doing this anymore? All the kids care about is how much you're paying them, is a good example and a window into the struggle that not just the older generation, but But everybody in college athletics, especially those who have been in college athletics for a while, is struggling to wrap their mind around. Change is hard, and we're seeing change, and a lot of it quickly. And people, especially those, again, who have been around the industry for a while, just aren't used to this happening. And you could hear in the things and the stories that Nick Saban shared, that one along with several others, that he didn't like the direction and the change going on in college athletics, specifically, obviously, a sport of football. And it was a large part of the reason that he's no longer a coach. And there are probably some basketball coaches who have recently retired who probably would say the same thing, right? Change is difficult, and we're seeing people in the industry struggle with this change. Not everybody, but certainly enough people in the industry are struggling with this change. While that was one story, there was another side of this, which was Nick Saban publicly stumping for college athletes to be paid, which was a interesting dichotomy, because he was talking about how one of the reasons he got out of the industry is because they are being paid, but as he says, they're being paid in an unregulated, kind of unwieldy environment, and he, like so many others, want some structure around it. So he said things about, one of his quotes is, "I'm for student athletes being able to share in some of the revenue. The number one solution is if we could have some kind of revenue sharing proposition that did not make student athletes employees. That's what we need. That may be the long-term solution." And a lot of people in the panel and in the room in Congress do agree. So those were, at least from Nick Saban's standpoint, a couple of big takeaways, right? That story, that kind of a bombshell, and then him publicly saying, oh, they should be paid though, but through a more regulated framework and not be employees.
A couple takeaways I had from it that, one, there had been kind of this vague, nebulous discussion of college coaches have had it. They're getting out because they're tired of this, of the way things are now. But there hadn't really been a lot of names associated with that. And now the biggest name of all is associated with that. As they're saying, that did help send me to retirement. Now, he was also in his 70s. He's retirement age. So it's probably a little bit easier to be choosy in terms of what's going to be enough to make you fed up, so to speak. And, so I'm not seeing guys in their 40s and 50s. I'm not seeing Kirby Smart saying, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I'm not seeing Ryan Day in that situation.
Jeff Hafley. Other guys, Jeff Hafley, Jeff, how are we going to survive without the BC coach?
Jeff Hafley, no offense, coach, but yeah, the sport will go on without you, as it will also go on without Nick Saban, as a matter of fact. As usual, the disconnect here is, Nick Saban has made $9 gazillion. He's made his money already. And these guys are 18, 19, 20 years old who want to make money in football. Oh, now everything's ruined that these guys want the money. I understand what Ross said. Change is hard. And this is a big change. And people are not going to like it. But from a fairness standpoint, there is change. And change is happening and will continue to happen along these lines. How regulated it is, how many guardrails are erected, we'll see. But you have to learn and adapt to the way things are, because it's not going back to the olden days where everybody was like, boy, I got a scholarship and I got 3 square meals a day and I'm living the great life. No, that's not the way athletes are going to be compensated going forward. So I don't sit there and have great like empathy or sympathy for Nick Saban, but I would appreciate his candor in this, and at least putting a name, a big name on, I don't like where things are going.
Yeah, this is his truth, right? He's speaking his story. He's 72. He's sitting there going, "Hey, I just don't like the way this is headed." And so I don't have a problem with it either. He's under no obligation to go to Washington and talk at a round table or whatever. I'm disappointed in the fact that that's fine. This is your opinion. And he has a lot of nuances and a lot of qualifiers usually that go into these stories. But he's a very smart guy, and he knows that when he tells stories like these that he keeps doing, they overwhelm the news cycle. Nick Saban's truth carries more weight than someone else's truth, and no one is able to challenge him on it, because it's like, what, you think you know more than Nick Saban, right? Anybody else in that panel that would have said, well, what about this, coach? Like, you're going to, you know, I can't remember which one. It might have been Barstool. So did he leave Washington and go to his lake house or his beach house? You know, hey, Texas A&M just hired Nebraska's AD today and maybe paying a $4 million buyout. Like, the AD's quitting for a better opportunity. All the stuff that we regularly bring up. But when he tells these stories, these are the ones that hit everywhere and really cast the sport in an unbelievably negative light. And he is getting pushback on it because Nick Saban dominated an era of the sport when it was based on how many high school All-Americans, how many elite high school talent could you sign? And were you at a school that could attract it? Were you at a school that was resourced in facilities to do that? Were you resourced in having a big enough scouting department that you didn't miss anybody? Were you resourced in having endless supply of analysts, including former NFL guys working on your staff? The imbalance in revenue was just not in compensation directly to the players. And Nick Saban did an incredible job of getting the best talent, getting more great talent than any other school year after year after year. And a lot of those kids came because it was going to be hard. He got high character players that were extremely competitive, and they followed his path to the NFL because that was the system. And he dominated it and went every year, but he won most of them, won a bunch of them. They never wavered. Now that we have a little bit of a different rule, a different little setup, he's out. They lost to Michigan, okay? Michigan is not like now flush with five-star recruits. They didn't have any, really. They had J.J. McCarthy and Donovan Edwards and Will Johnson. I think those are the three guys. They didn't have, like, Michigan was able to win because they got to be able to stay old and keep their guys through some of the stuff. And the sport had changed a little, but it's not like this just total upstart came along, bought all the players and beat Alabama. And you could say, well, I got to see where he might. But they lose to Michigan or you know, they still had, according to the 24/7 sports composite rankings, for whatever you want to make out of that, it's been pretty accurate. They had the most talented team maybe of all time, or at least during their recruiting rankings last year. So you kind of like, well, you know, is this really it? Like, are we just trying to or is it just, I just don't like it, so I'm leaving? If you don't like it, that's fine. That doesn't necessarily mean there's a crisis. And he does bring some of that stuff up. But when you tell these stories like, why are we doing this? Every guy on my team only cares about money. Like, he knows that is, I am going to say that is unlikely to be true. More than before, sure. Half, maybe. The majority, maybe. I don't know. But every guy, like when you come in, when you're Nick Saban, you have so much power and so much might in your voice. There's a responsibility to be careful with what you're saying. I get it. It's his truth. I would like him to be more careful in what he's saying. Because when he tells the Miss Terry story, boom, there it goes. And everyone's going, oh, my God, see, the sport's doomed. And I don't even know if he really believes that.
Jimbo Fisher would like him to be more careful with what he says, too.
Jimbo Fisher would. Well, maybe he was right on, no.
He bought his entire team. Well, wait.
Bought his, yeah, minute, right. Like, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, yes. Go ahead, Ross.
No, yeah, it does. There's a, you know, a lot of the comments, obviously, because I was there, so I was live tweeting stuff. And that tweet is still going around a lot. And people are saying things like, just, you know, read the room sort of thing, right? Check the temperature of the current environment. Maybe there are stories you don't share because of the way they may make people feel a certain way. And that's probably one of them. But I am glad he's truthful on why he decided to retire, which sounds like that was a pretty significant conversation that him and his wife had about retirement and retiring. You know, I think a lot of this goes back to, and this came up during the hearing, Nick Saban's frustration, especially early during the NIL era at Texas A&M, in the state of Texas, in states that have resources and economic resources that are that give it the advantage over, say, in Alabama. That came up during the hearing, actually. I think I wrote briefly about it, about you know, one of the West Virginia senators, I believe, was there, not Joe Manchin, but the other one. And she asked Nick Saban about the difference about, you know, West Virginia obviously has a very small economy, doesn't have pro teams, blah, 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 in how they can compete, that state economically can compete with like a Texas or a Florida or a California or whatever, name the state economies and how different they are. And then he launched into the situation where it was pretty subtle that he was referring to Texas, to the state of Texas and Texas A&M and the University of Texas, who, you know, he said things like, well, the rich will get richer in this type of environment and there's no parity and the, you know, the parity is lost. When really, as we've talked about this on the show before,
I mean, really,
it is, it is, and throughout that,
the rich will get richer, huh? Yeah. Did you get richer and keep getting players after players after players? What
is it, six national titles at Alabama.
Yeah, and I wrote that in my story. It was ironic that he said that, right? Because after 15 years of basically being the number one, having the number one recruiting class, and at least half of the years having the number one team that won the national championship, here he is saying this. But again, this is how he feels. But we've discussed on the show, right, that the parity, at least in the top 20 to 30 teams, there is parity there more than what we've seen in the past. Maybe not in the top 100. Right. No way. But I think in the top 20, certainly there is that parity that we're seeing. But let's just get down to it. That's what this has kind of felt like to me about is, look, I was sitting there in I was number one in college athletics recruiting on the field. And then this, you know, and then there was a change to the system, and the change to the system impacted me because while I have great resources, I probably don't have the resources of certain states and certain state schools.
Yeah. Same story as it almost always is for coaches. As soon as I'm at a disadvantage, there's a problem with the system. We need to fix the system because I'm being disadvantaged here. And look, Nick Saban has a great perspective on a lot of things, but the bottom line, he is a competitor and he was no longer had the competitive advantage that he used to have. And that probably ate him up. And, you know, yes, whether it's players necessarily. So you've got to play that game and you've got to go in and say, hey, we're just going to outbid you for these guys, or we're going to get you this much NIL or this much through this collective or whatever. I'm sure that was not enjoyable, not the way he was used to doing business, but here we are, 2024.
I think with coaches, and I've had I don't know who's talking to Nick Saban or who he's listening to, but there isn't a lot of blowback, right? Whatever Nick Saban says, everyone kind of nods, or no one's going to challenge him. generally. Now, maybe he does have people to challenge him. That'd be great. I know I've had discussions with the Hall of Fame basketball coach about this, and it's like they bring up this and you're like, yeah, but what about that? They don't want to hear it, or they never consider it. And so like I can see it. I don't want to say this about Nick Saban, but I can see this type of coach in general not recognizing that having a bigger recruiting budget, having better recruiting facilities, having better facilities, having proximity to talent, having more analysts, having all this stuff isn't an advantage. It's just what is.
Right.
Instead of, and then yeah. If all of a sudden it's like, well, these guys might have more money. They know to go to the places that have all that stuff, but it's a new advantage. It's a new variable. It's really not a new variable, but it's an open variable now. And I think that they aren't really hearing it, or maybe thinking about the basic concept of like, you know, the player can now bring up openly, hey, how much am I going to get? And it's like, all you care about is money. Well, probably not. I don't believe that the players are only going for the top $1 more. I think they want, generally speaking, a little bit more, but what's the best fit? And we see in the transfer portal playing time being a huge thing. And so, again, you go on and on about, well, it's not going to be a level playing field. I think Senator Cruz said, it's not fun to watch a football game. You've got equivalent of an NFL team on one side and a junior high flag football team on the other. I guess he was watching the Michigan non-conference schedule last year. I didn't know he was. yeah. But
it's a little bit of hyperbole
Senator Cruz, a Wolverine fan. That doesn't make for a very good game. Parity and competitiveness is in jeopardy right now. And again, it's like, who's talking to this guy? It's not. It's not. We've been yelling this for 5 years. It hasn't come true. There's no indication that competitiveness is in jeopardy or parity. There was no parity before. There's a little parity now. Holy right. cow. Michigan can win a national title. Michigan, right? Like hey, that's where we're at.
We had TCU in the playoff. We had Cincinnati in the playoff. There was some hope, you know.
There was. Look. The last year's Final Four, San Diego State and FAU, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Look at this tournament. So it absolutely is wrong, yet here he is still saying it.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't think they're going to come up with any bill here. Let me ask you this, Ross, and I don't ask you to be the government expert here, but so this was not a hearing. This was a roundtable discussion, right? Because
that's right. There was a hearing going on simultaneously, actually.
There was a hearing. Okay.
Yeah, it was about athlete that was separately. I had to pick my poison there, Dan. Am I going to the NIL Saban roundtable, or am I going to an athlete employment hearing in the House? Let me tell you, that was an easy decision.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a hearing is at least some kind of an official thing. Granted, nothing gets done out of them.
No, especially in the House. If it was a Senate hearing, the witness list would have probably been stronger, and I might have gone there. But the House hearings are
that's when they're like waving pom poms on the thing. Yeah, right.
Never so much time. Yeah.
But Cruz is a Republican, and the Democrats run the Senate, so he cannot call a hearing.
Right.
Now we know that there are millions of dollars have been paid into Washington to lobby, right? We know that some conferences and schools are lobbying. They're paying lobbyists to lobby. I don't know all that entails with lobbying. And I would just, for the record, reiterate that everyone involved in this particular roundtable, impeccable credentials, impeccable integrity. This group, impeccable. But we know there's millions of dollars going in, and and I know that senators and congressmen, amazing, they make like 135 grand a year and have like three houses. Like they really can make a dollar stretch. These are amazing. Like they never like cost of groceries goes up for the rest of us.
Big coupon clippers in the Senate.
Incredible. Impeccable integrity, Pat. Impeccable. Yes,
absolutely. Okay?
Impeccable Always. Integrity. But I know there's millions of dollars going to lobbyists. And then we have these senators and stuff who don't really make that much money, but have many houses, but are of impeccable credentials. So I don't know, but I'm just saying, so we can't really call a hearing. So we call a round table. We get a round table and then we bring in and we get, and then the Senator Cruz, he's sitting right next to Nick Saban, right? He got right next to him. Good photo op, right? There he is working with Coach Saban, working with the GOAT. Work solving problem. I mean, you know, he's from Texas, Alabama, but that's okay. It's still Saban. And then Saban gets an open mic to tell this story and everyone gets their headline. And like, this wasn't even a thing. What happened other than impeccable integrity? Other than that, what was this?
Ross, well, what do you got for us?
You don't have to defend it. If you know, I'm not making you defend it. I'm just saying what... This was just a big photo op circle, impeccable integrity, that lobbying money, millions of, I don't know. No one knows. Impeccable.
I think this was, you know, it's an election year. Ted Cruz is running re-election for him. So keep that in mind. But I think he said afterward, we had a little media scrum with him, that he held this in order to further the discussion and highlight and get moving something, you know, get moving legislation that has kind of stalled out. I asked him, you know, in the fall, he said it was 60-40 that he thought a bill would pass in this Congress. I asked him a follow-up to that, and he said he would adjust it to 50-50 right now. And he said that there's only 2 months to go. There's a two-month window to get this done before the true election season arrives. Now, a lot of people, right, believe that that's the ship sailed already, and this is not going to happen. And you're right, you know, Ted Cruz can't really call a hearing. It has to be by Maria Cantwell, the Washington senator, who is the chair of the Commerce Committee. So it's kind of the ball's in her court to call a hearing and further this discussion. But Booker in Blumenthal on one side and Ted Cruz and Jerry Moran on the other, the Republicans, Democrats, they've now been engrossed for about 3 months in redlining a draft and working on something. And Cruz was not specific yesterday on why they haven't agreed to anything. And I think there's a few things. I think the employment issue is one, giving the NCAA an antitrust exemption is another. And then what the entity is that oversees basically all of this. Is it the NCAA or an outside body? Those are kind of three things that they seem to not be able to come to an agreement on.
Now, Greg Byrne did it. He at least, I thought, articulated what they're asking for, right?
Yeah.
They are asking for an antitrust mm-hmm. exemption. They are asking for a non-employee relationship, right? You know, I thought at least that was good to hear from an athletic director who's like, let's just say what we are hoping to get out of these congressional hearings that go on and on and on and lead to nothing. So I appreciated him at least putting that on the table.
I thought he had some really good comments, too, of like at least trying to be, you know, because everyone just yells at, well, you got the money, you got the money. And he's like, my other sports run a $40 million deficit. I need football to pay for those.
Yeah.
And kind of lays it out as like, we need some kind of cost certainty or this or that. I can, and we have argued whether that's the responsibility of the football team to pay for those other sports.
Right.
I don't think it should be, but I certainly appreciate these guys are running a business one way and all of a sudden the revenue has changed and they're trying to figure out how they can keep going. Like, will we lose, you know, they don't want to lose sports or whatever. Are they using mm-hmm. that as a, could we have cost controls on football?
Right.
You know, they talk about having a salary cap on the players, but there's nothing on salary cap on how many analysts you have.
Yeah.
Or how big your weight room is.
I mean, I've talked to enough ADs who are like, that's a non-starter. We're going to keep paying what it takes to get right. the best people we can. We're not going to, certainly not unilaterally cap our salaries and our staff size and our facilities if we think it's going to help us win in football. So, yeah. And look, some points were raised, I thought, saliently in relation to what he said of, you know, for decades, colleges have been able to have football and also have all these other sports. And that was back when football wasn't making the money it is now. So where is there still a commitment for the university to have the other sports, which are generally good for universities? They generally bring in good students who graduate at a high degree, who work hard in the classroom, who put a good public face on the school. So maybe it shouldn't all be the athletic department's job or the football team's job to pay for all the sports. Maybe the university itself should be more invested in that area.
That's my point. Yeah, go ahead, Ross.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, I think that you know, Jim Phillips as well kind of went into the whole, obviously, employment was a big topic. And Jim Phillips and Greg, but we already talked about what Greg Burns said, you know, all Alabama non-rev sports lose about $40 million annually. And that hole is filled by mainly football. And Jim Phillips talked about that too, and talked about if athletes are deemed employees and you have to pay them a salary from the university, that he believes that, you know, a lot of schools wouldn't have a problem with paying football and basketball players whose sports earn revenue. Depends on what the school is. I mean, there are schools out there that their football team makes a $50 million profit. I remember one year I covered LSU. LSU football made a $50 million profit. In their basketball schools, that probably make a $3 to $5 million profit at the most, probably, I would guess. So it's fine paying them, right? He said. And then to satisfy Title IX, you would pay the equivalent number of female athletes. So say you pay football and men's basketball, that's you know, scholarship wise, let's just say a round number of 100. Then you have to pay 100 women athletes. You would think women's basketball would be in there, right? And in a couple other women's sports. And then he said, basically, the rest of the sports will be cut. And he talked about schools going from 28 to 6 sports. Now, will that really happen? Will a school actually cut 22 sports? I have a hard time believing that. Will there be a certain amount of sports cut, or will sports go drop down into a club team of some sort, where they're almost player led? Maybe.
I think we already see some of this. 28 is, I think, what North Carolina has, 28 teams, big athletic department. Ohio State has 33. Auburn is 21. LSU has 21. I mean, these are, what'd you say, made $50 million in profit, SEC membership, 100,000-seat stadium for Auburn, and I mean, both of those schools. LSU's maybe 100, Auburn's maybe a little less, whatever. Tons and tons of money. Both do really well at the gate in basketball, gymnastics, and baseball. Probably all, I don't know if they're profitable, but they all do pretty well. Women's basketball, like, they're not total drains. And yet they're only doing, they're doing a dozen less sports than Ohio State, right? So some of it's like they cut by never even getting that big, and maybe you cut some more. Could some of these teams go club? Could it just be a decision by the university? Is this truly worth it? I think my problem with the generally problem with the system is the argument is the university, let's say it's North Carolina that Jim Phillips was talking about. They have 28 schools and it drops to 6 varsity sports. What they're saying, what he's saying is the University of North Carolina or some school, some major school with 28 sports would look and say, these 22 teams aren't worth us spending a dime on. But currently they're saying, without giving them a choice, the football team and maybe the men's basketball team are obligated to fund it. Like, if the sport doesn't matter to the university, if the university will not care enough to fund this sport, then why should the football team arbitrarily do it? Why should the football players arbitrarily do it? That's the bit. Like, why? If you want to fund all, you could fund 50 teams. These schools are loaded. They can pass it on to students. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, and we've had this discussion many times, but athletic departments were never devised as the money goes into the silos of the sports based on how much you earn. You know, they were always, the money goes from whoever earns it goes into a large pot and is distributed however it's distributed. And football has always brought in the most money. Basketball has always brought in the second most. And those two continue to spend the most. But, you know, I don't think anybody ever has strong-armed football and said, guess what? You have to pay for everything. That was the accepted way things were done. That's the way athletic departments have always operated. The athletic department operating within its, when it doesn't get university funding from elsewhere. I do think, to your point, and as I said earlier, the argument could be made that if a broad-based athletic program matters to the university, then university funding could perhaps be called upon to make sure the other sports remain and are viable and aren't just savaged down to, you know, zombie sports that exist in name only. So I get it. I understand the football people want all the money. They've already gotten most of the money and they always get more.
But that's not the players. Thing. But we're talking.
No, this is no, a, this I know. Is a, no, the players are the new development.
Right.
But, okay.
We've this also worked. The system worked until they had to cut the players in.
Yeah, more or less. Although schools have always been looking for ways to cut non-revenue.
They have
sports.
Been looking to cut sports, and no
pandemic. Oh my gosh, we're going to go under. Iowa, let's cut sports. Michigan State, let's cut sports. Did you go under in the pandemic? Any of you? No.
I think the lights are still on in Iowa City. Yeah, yeah. East Lansing, all of that. All right. Well, it was good content. impeccable integrity.
Always, impeccable. Always.
Round table.
Above reproach.
Round table. Above reproach. Suggesting nothing. Suggesting nothing. All right, we'll be back after this message. All right, Ross, do we have some CFP update? Because this is a big week for that and whether or not we're going to have automatic everything for the Big Ten. The Big Ten SEC Invitational is what they need to call this thing if all of their proposals go through. Where are we?
Yeah, there's always a CFP update, Dan.
I know.
It never ends. We've had 5 years of a freaking CFP update. And maybe we're getting closer, I think, to the finish line of an agreement with the CFP and ESPN to strike this extension. So inching closer, commissioners are meeting, I think, today and tomorrow with their presidents to present similar things that they have already presented to their athletic directors over the last few days that we reported about last Friday, the revenue distribution model being the most important of those. But I know everybody loves to talk about the format. And I think what you're going to have, what I'm led to believe when this deal this week, and we've talked about it before, that a format kind of has taken a backseat to the revenue model, that a official full playoff format might not be formalized until later, maybe days, weeks, maybe even months from now. But you're going to have protections in there. And I think you're going to have the champions of the Power Four leagues, if each league get an automatic berth. And I think you'll have the group of five, highest ranked group of five champion get an automatic berth. And then there'll probably be some protection for Notre Dame, some guarantee if they finish in the top 10 or 12 or 14 to get an at-large spot in whatever model they choose. I think, you know, we talked about how the guaranteed buys for the Big Ten and SEC first round buys, that those are kind of been tabled a little bit. Public reaction, obviously, to my story a couple weeks ago, I think, has ushered that, at least for now, out the door. But I also think there's some traction being lost in multiple AQs for an individual league. So the 3-3-2-2-1, model, which was originally talked about in socialized to ADs, I think that's being scaled down. And as we mentioned in Friday's story, the 5+9 14 team format is definitely something that's being considered in a way that it wasn't maybe just a week or two ago. And the 5+9, similar to the 5+7 over the next 2 years, it just adds two additional at-large spots. Now, whatever format they come up with, this is important, can be changed by the Big Ten and SEC specifically, maybe in consultation with ESPN and others, but Big Ten and SEC will have a lot of power to change formats. So keep that in mind as we go through this. But I think still on pace by, you know, by the end of this week or by the weekend to have some kind of finalization of the rev model, these format protections, and then the signing of the deal to extend with ESPN.
Well, I'd be pleased if the 3-3-2-2-1 zone press is off the table. I certainly would be pleased if they have dropped the, you know, truly obnoxious automatic buys for the SEC and Big Ten. You know, if they're listening, that's good. And I hope people have raised enough of a stink in the room with them and elsewhere to realize that the overreach is egregious and not appreciated by a lot of people. You know, still, are they going to push through the money thing? Yeah, probably. They're going to get their money. Going to get their money, and eventually they'll get the spots, as we've said many times, that you don't have to rig a system that you already have the advantages in.
You're already winning. Yeah.
Yes, you're already winning. Stop trying to absolutely cheat it, you know? So good if we're making at least some concessions out there. But this, again, is like, you know, the bully on the bus that says, all right, I was going to punch you 5 days a week. Now I'm only going to punch you 3. Guess what? I'm only going to punch you 2 now. Isn't that great? God, I'm nice.
Hey, it's all about expectations. It's all about expectations. All right, it is championship week in college basketball, which is a fun week, particularly early in the week. I don't know. I know Pat was watching last night, Tuesday night. Great night of basketball, all the different, and Monday. NEC, the Horizon, the
CAA, Max, the Summit. Yeah.
The MAC. Yeah, all those. The one bid leagues are the best. Like, yeah. Those games are just dramatic. You're down those last 4 minutes, and like, it's a NCAA tournament game, right? It's a play-in game. You're in, you're out, you win, you don't. Everyone's excited. A lot of people are excited, not of Milwaukee, but Greg Campy, Oakland University basketball coach. He's been there 40 years. Took over when it was a Division II team and has been there for 40 years. He's back in the NCAAs. They've made it before. Not his first bid in 40 years. That'd be immense patience for a university. it was cool to see him get back. He's a great guy. Raised a lot of money for he's got a good team, too. Raised a lot of money for Coaches vs. Cancer. He was just after winning the regular season Horizon League championship game. He worked the drive-through of a local McDonald's to promote raising money for the Ronald McDonald. This is not your normal, coach. So people are happy for that. I always like those days. Other big news was, and Pat, you probably broke it. Not a real surprise, but Louisville is replacing Kenny Payne after a disastrous 2 years. So I want to posit this completely unfair question for this guy, but it's very, very interesting to me, is Dusty May, the coach at Florida Atlantic, who took the Owls to the Final Four last year. He's from Indiana. He's 47 years old. I think they're 27-4 right now.
Not quite that good, but they're good. Yeah.
They're not quite that good. How good are they? Pretty good.
I'm looking them up here.
All right.
They're 24-7, not 27-4. Okay. 24-7. Okay.
24-7. Very good. But this is the guy, you know, somebody in the mid, he's from Indiana. He was went to Indiana. He was a Bob Knight manager.
Manager, yeah.
Yep. He's a terrific.
Great way to get into coaching.
Great way to get, yeah, Lawrence Frank. He's a couple of those guys made it to the NBA. Lawrence Frank. We have Louisville open. We have potential. Indiana decided to stick with Mike Woodson. We have Ohio State potentially open. I don't know what they're going to do, but they fired.
No, it's open.
It's open. They're not going with you.
I mean, they may keep Jake Diebler, but I kind of don't think so.
Okay. And then there's Michigan, which could open.
Yeah. Yeah.
Juwan Howard, certainly, I don't think anyone will riot in the streets crying unfairness if Juwan Howard is let go. And then you have this guy who's absolutely crushing it at Florida Atlantic, of all places, who happens to be like mid out of the Midwest coaching, like, factory, right? Who gets them, Pat?
Oh, it's a good question. A lot of it. Definitely, I think Ohio State and Louisville have interest. I would imagine if Michigan opens, they would have interest. And there's a lot of angst with Indiana fans who are like, why are we keeping Mike Woodson if we're not, if it could cost us Dusty May? I mean, because they want Dusty May after taking Florida freaking Atlantic to the Final Four and then turning around going 24-7 after upgrading leagues this year into the American Athletic Conference. I mean, he is proving himself, and the Indiana fans are like ill at the thought of him going to either a Big Ten rival or Louisville 100 miles down the road. So Dusty has his suitors for sure.
Good to be Dusty.
Good to be Dusty. Good to be Dusty. You know, Louisville's trying to take some big swings. They're, you know, Scott Drew, they want to talk to Scott Drew maybe and try to throw the moon at him. I still don't think Scott Drew is going to leave Baylor. I mean, he has built something there that seemed impossible. Just opened a great new arena last year. Recruits well in Texas. Family likes it there. I think he probably stays. There's even been some blue sky talk about trying to get Billy Donovan if he gets fired with the Bulls, but that's also something where you'd have to wait until who knows when, mid-April at the earliest. So here's my prediction. You want my prediction?
I want your prediction.
Okay. Dusty May to Ohio State. Josh Schertz from Indiana State to Louisville. And I don't know what Michigan's going to do. We'll see if Michigan wants in on the carousel, and they better do it quickly because other people are laying groundwork.
What's a better job, basketball job, Ohio State or Louisville?
That's a great question. I think Louisville is. Louisville cares about basketball. You know, Louisville is a basketball school with a 22,000-seat arena that they will fill when times are good. Now, Louisville right now financially is not in great shape. Ohio State, at least in theory and seemingly according to the balance sheet, has more money than God. And so if you want to fund your NIL and do all those things, you would think Ohio State might be have a little bit more there for you, unless it's they're just like, no, we're only funding football. The rest of y'all kind of figure it out. We'll see. It's a new era, new AD there too. And Ross Bjork has been on the cutting edge of NIL stuff, but is he a huge fan of a broad-based athletic department, or is he a football guy? I don't know. Gene Smith was a football guy who also wanted to be good at everything. So it is good to be Dusty May, though, Dan. He's going to have options.
Dusty's good people.
Great people.
And great coach.
For a fan of the pod, right? Didn't he Dusty say that at a press conference?
Dusty, last year at the Final Four, I grabbed him after he got off the podium. I had asked him a question on the podium, and then I grabbed him afterwards, and he said, hey, you said, you know, Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. Why don't you just say Pat Forty from the pod?
I mean, all the bright young people in college athletics are listening to the pod. I mean, this is not a surprise.
Yes.
We should get credentialed for the pod, and when it all of us, and on our nameplates, it, you know, it says our name, and underneath it, it says
the pod,
spelled P-A-W-D.
Yeah.
There you go.
Is it P-A-W-D or P-H?
P-A-H-D.
I don't know.
It's P-A-A-A-W-D. Yeah. Pod.
Depends if I was drinking the night before.
Well, Dusty, if you're listening, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Dusty.
He's probably a little busy this week, isn't he?
The funny part is, I mean, he's like, really? Really? Do you need to spend 8 minutes discussing where I'm going? I'm trying to coach a freaking team here, buddy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The funny thing about that question, what's a better basketball job? Louisville, they care more, but they care at Ohio State and Michigan. I would say both of them. When Ohio State and Michigan, if you're good at what you do, you're going to make the Final Four.
Yeah.
Like the institutional might of both of those schools in basketball, even though they are undoubtedly the second sport, is amazing. And in Ohio State is going to pick through whatever player they want in the state of Ohio in every sport and pretty much get them. And there's a lot of great basketball players in the state of Ohio, not just LeBron James, but all, and there's all these cities that play. And Michigan, very similarly, I mean, you know, Beeline made what, two finals? They lost to Louisville in one of them, you know.
Right. Yeah. Beeline made two Final Fours. Obviously, Steve Fisher went there multiple times.
Thad Mata made two Final Fours. Like, if you get your act together at either of those two places, you don't need it to be the sport. You can win. And obviously, Michigan, Detroit is basically a suburb of Detroit, and there's an enormous amount of talent in that city, football and basketball.
Is the Michigan job open yet?
No.
Okay. No, and it may not, but there's a lot of heat right now on Juwan Howard. We'll see. So, you know,
any of these jobs are really good jobs, and but it is interesting. Like, I don't know that it's hard to say. Like, Louisville is far more passionate basketball fan base and all that, but I don't know, man. Ohio State, you just kind of, if you're good, you're going to do good.
Yeah. And I will say, like, Dusty May's the kind of guy now. I mean, he's an Indiana guy. He's an Indiana kid. He eats, sleeps, breathes basketball and knows what big-time basketball feels like. But he's also the kind of guy, he's liked it at Florida Atlantic where he rides his bike to work and people don't, you know, make that big a deal about him. And at Ohio State or Michigan, they certainly would not make as big a deal about you as they would about Ryan Day or Sherrone Moore.
Yeah, Louisville they will. So,
yeah.
Yeah. All right, good hoop talk right there. Pretty good hoop talk. All right, game of would you eat it? I actually think we would eat almost all of this stuff, but we have the Big 12. You know, they're famous for having their concessions at the Big 12 basketball tournament. They bring in food from each school's home city.
Yeah.
Well, the Big 12 now has like 37 teams in it. So we got we have a lengthy list. So I'm just going to read it out. We don't have to play would you eat it. These are the best foods at these places. So any thoughts on each one? But this is
if they have Jell-O salad for Provo, I'm going to die laughing. They probably don't.
Well, let's see what I don't know. I have not pre-planned it. The Baylor brisket slider, Dr. Pepper glazed brisket, sweet slaw on a brioche bun.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Got to have that Dr. Pepper, a little sweetness in there. BYU does not have the Jell-O salad.
Okay.
Okay. Shot of whiskey and coffee. No, I'm only kidding.
I perked up. You got excited there, Dan.
BYU. Apologies to BYU. It's a joke. It's a joke. Cosmos churros. This looks good. Caramel filled churro. Sweet cream drizzle, mini marshmallows, cinnamon sugar, and a toffee crumble.
Huh? Ooh.
Who needs whiskey when you got that? Yeah.
Yeah, you need maybe you have a whiskey glaze.
You don't need that. You don't need that at all. That is how you attract people there. That is a good thing. All right. UCF, Central Florida's in there. Citronaut drink, orange soda and vanilla ice cream.
Mm.
Classic. A classic.
Okay. Sure.
Cincy, no.
Like that chili, is it that Skyline chili?
Cheese coney, jumbo hot dog, Cincinnati style chili, onion, and cheddar cheese. You got to go with it, but I'm opposed. Yeah,
I mean, the cinnamon just kills the chili. I can't have it.
They went with the jumbo dog, not that little dog they usually put in there, though.
Oh, yeah, right. The Skyline with the tiny dogs.
Yeah, it does not say Skyline either. I mean, like, come on, Big. Come on, Big 12. You got to go. Let's get some name brand in there. You want Dr. Pepper? Houston.
But they're a Big 12 sponsor.
Who's that? Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Dr. Pepper, yeah.
Houston, Shasta's Brisket Tacos. Mm. Chopped beef brisket, corn and black bean salsa, cilantro, lime, and corn tortillas. All right.
I'm writing all these down because I think at the end of this, we should pick a meal that we would want. Like, you know, two or three of them, a meal.
Okay, maybe, a meal.
You know, a meal, maybe an app, the entree, and then there's some desserts in here too.
Iowa State, just a side of corn. That was all they did. Corn and
corn and dwind
water.
Water and corn. Yep. And a Busch Light. No. ISU green chili pork walking taco. Tacos are popular.
Yeah.
Doritos, green chili pork, shredded lettuce, cheddar and jack cheese, sour cream. The Doritos put in there. Hmm. Oh, the walking taco is when they put it inside the bag of Doritos. Is that right?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. The traveling taco. Oh, yeah.
You ever been to Texas?
Never heard of this.
You ever heard of Frito pie?
Yeah.
They put all the stuff in the chips bag?
Yeah, you open the bag and you put the stuff in there and you eat it out of the bag.
Right out of the bag. So it cuts down on having to do the dishes.
So it's not a taco. It's like nachos.
It's a walking taco.
Kind of. Yeah, yeah. It's like a Ross
for sure. Ross's mind is blown. This is a false advertising.
We need guardrails on the tacos.
Yeah. What a congressional hearing on this.
A walking taco. Big J's loaded mac and cheese. Who is this for? Mm.
It doesn't who say. Would be after Iowa State? Would be Kansas?
Yes, it's supposed to be Kansas.
Kind of go through alphabetical.
Kansas is so powerful in the Big 12, it didn't even have its name listed. It just says Big J's. Is that the Jayhawk, I guess? Is Jayhawk named Big J?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. They need all the help they can get this year.
Yeah,
playing on Wednesday, 6 seed, I believe they are.
It's tough. Victims. Cavatappi pasta, creamy cheese sauce, house smoked pulled pork, barbecue sauce, crispy fried onions with a dash of crimson red pepper flakes. They have the most ingredients. I mean, can't go wrong with that. Basically, a really high end mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Kansas State, the Power Cat PB&J.
Oh my gosh.
A fried PB&J sandwich.
Wow.
Okay, so you make a peanut butter and jelly. I'm assuming that's what PB&J stands for. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
Do you talk Kansas State? I don't know. And then what? You put it in a deep fryer?
God, I hope not.
Do you dip it in like batter? Well, what else?
Would you toast it? Maybe you toast it.
Oh, like fried on a skillet?
Or maybe. No, yeah, or a toaster, or you put it in a toaster oven.
It says fried, not toasted. It says fried.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you pan fried in some way. I don't know.
That seems very apt for Manhattan, Kansas.
Dang.
Peanut butter and jelly.
That is a sandwich. All right. Oklahoma, the Oklahoma onion burger. Tobacco onions, ranch dipper. What is this? Okay. I guess there's a burger too, though. What's a tobacco onion?
That's like, isn't that those thin kind of onions? Like thin fried onions?
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
OSU Orange Power Pizza. Okay. When I think Stillwater, I think pizza. Pepperoni, sausage, ham, sweet pepper, bacon, mozzarella, cheddar, and ranch drizzle. I know I said mozzarella wrong.
It's great. That's how you just, yes. So the mozzarella will guarantee that will get 3 comments at least.
Yeah. I can't even say much. I can't say anything. That's the whole point of the show. All right. A ranch drizzle on your pizza. TCU, the Cowtown Loaded Tots.
Okay.
Fried tater tots, spicy queso sauce, chopped house smoked brisket, corn and black bean salsa, topped with horn frog purple sour cream. Got to throw that purple on there.
Mm.
At what point is Fort Worth no longer a cow town? Like, it's a nice city.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, they're so tied to cattle that they'll never not be cow town. I mean, historically and even currently.
Well, they get the
stockyards.
Stockyards.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's
rodeo.
Like downtown Fort Worth is like trendy
it's good.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
All right. Texas, the Big Bertha loaded baked potato. Big Bertha used to be a golf club. Chopped house smoked brisket, cheddar cheese, green onion, sour cream, butter. I guess it's a baked potato. And barbecue sauce. I feel like they only have
brisket
like,
in these, huh?
Yeah, like they got like 6 ingredients. They're just finding different
probably
ways.
Probably got this many teams from Texas. You're going to have a lot of brisket.
Well, we're going to put it in a Dorito bag. Uh-huh. Right? We're going to. Texas Tech. Oh, yeah, this is a good one. The Masked Rider Burger. All beef patty, cheddar, fried onion rings, sweet pickled jalapenos, Red Raiders barbecue sauce.
Dang. Yeah. I'm all over that.
And this one is a. Super solid. West Virginia, the Mountaineer pepperoni roll. Sliced pepperoni and mozzarella in a cheese roll.
Can you get one of those while riding their little tram?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Also, fried. Are you done, Dan?
Well, there's the Big 12 dog too. What is like? It's like rooting for the house at blackjack. Oh,
yeah, nobody cares about that.
It's a hot dog with some crap on it.
I've got the fry PB&J.
Okay.
Recipe. Yeah. Now this is from Dallas, so this isn't a Kansas. This specific one. This is a famous place in Dallas with a fried PB&J. You make a PB&J like you normally would, then you freeze it. You put it in the freezer, and you freeze it. And then you prepare, then you dunk it, you get out of the freezer after it's frozen, you dunk it into pancake batter, then you deep fry it in oil at 375. Now, I'm going to tell you what, sign me up, buddy. That sounds awesome.
That does sound good.
That might be the fried. Anyone is that Big 12 tournament, send us some pictures of the fried PB&J. You don't have to get it, but. You probably should, because, I mean, it's a fried PB&J.
You should get one of everything if you're going to be there for a few days.
You're going to be there long enough.
Send us pictures of all of it.
Yeah, send us some pictures. Big 12, good job on your concession work. All right, we'll be back. Oh, go ahead. You got more?
Oh, yeah. Dan, I got to pick what my meal would be. All right.
What's your meal?
So my appetizer is going to be this pepperoni roll from West Virginia. Sounds amazing, right? Okay. That's a good That's a good start.
Never seen it.
And then my entree, I got to go with something. I mean, all these things have brisket. So I think what sounded the best to me of like all the brisket ones were the brisket. Maybe it's it wasn't the walking brisket taco because I thought that was weird. But give me an entree with a loaded baked potato with the brisket in it. I don't remember which school that was, but that was good. That sounds good. And I'll finish that up with this orange and ice cream from UCF. That sounds great.
There you go. Nice.
All right.
That's good.
Ross is
only 4,000 calories in that.
Ross is furiously texting Cody Brunner, our college sports editor. Yeah, I need to cover the Big 12 championship.
Got to get there.
Keep an eye on just to go down there and eat. All right. Thank you for listening. We're going to do something Sunday night, so we should be out. First thing Monday morning, we'll break down the brackets in our own fashion, which probably will involve talking about football. But you never know. No, we'll do it. We'll be there Sunday night. So we'll be up first thing Monday morning, if not sooner. And appreciate everyone listening. Continue to subscribe. Talk to you later.